Well, there's nothing that beats a round of applause for offering. Good job, guys. I'm proud of you. And just to pick up where Melinda left off, y'all are ridiculous. I mean, you put the us in ridiculous. Because last week, 2,100 folks went out to 33 different schools all over Oldham and Jefferson County, and we continued to earn for ourselves the reputation as the Love the Ville Church, one small act of great love at a time. The thank you notes from principals and teachers have not stopped coming in. Two news stations showed up and did stories on us. The mayor came out to St. Matt's in order to support us and cheer us on. JCPS administrators were tweeting about us. Thousands of people viewed our school blitz online last week. And most importantly, me and my 3.5-year-old son, Palmer, gave out somewhere around 400 ice creams, Pop-Tarts, donuts, and drinks before 11 a.m. And Jesus is why. Jesus is why. Now, check this out. As soon as the blitz was over with, it was crazy. I was driving home, and my mind began to wonder. And you know what I began to dream about? Next year. Next year's school blitz. And how it was going to be even bigger and better than this year. And then I started to think about 5 years from now, 25 years from now, how one day maybe we could blitz every single school in Jefferson County and Oldham County, how we could start a movement where hundreds of churches took church to school and just emerged on our city's campuses. And national media turned its attention to us. Congressmen were tweeting about us. The president noticed. And Palmer and I got to lead an entire army of ice cream trucks. With the weird music, you know, like, just, okay. I mean, but can't you see it, y'all? I can see it. And here's what I believe. Never say never with this church right here. Okay, so there's something interesting I've noticed about human beings. We have this capacity to dream these big dreams, right? We have this capacity to envision the future, like a better version of our communities, a better version of our neighborhoods, a better version of our churches and our families, a better version of ourselves. And that makes us unique in the animal kingdom. Giraffes, turtles, jellyfish, crickets, they do not build their lives based on a vision for the future. No. But we as human beings created in the image of God do. Because we're hardwired by God, I believe, as visionaries. It's an amazing gift. The only problem with that gift is you and me. You see, I don't know if you've noticed, but even though we can dream big dreams, we human beings have a terribly difficult time taking those dreams and turning them into reality. I mean, how many dreams have you dreamed that have just remained dreams? Because you're too lazy. How many visions, God-sent visions of a better future, have you caught but then quietly aborted because you were afraid? Or you lacked faith? How many times have you seen the future and felt its potential, but then thought to yourself, tomorrow is when I will begin forging toward tomorrow. See, you know what I think the problem is for a lot of us? I think the problem for a lot of us is impatience. Paralysis, if you will, because we will catch these big, bold, brave, courageous, 100,000-mile, 100,000-step dreams, but then we'll realize how much hard work it's going to take to accomplish them. And so we'll abdicate them because we don't want to put in the work. You know what most of us want? Most of us want a fast food future, right? But what I found in my 32 years on this earth is that the things that are most enjoyable and the things that are most worth having in life take hard work. They take time. They take sacrifice. They take effort. They take energy. And yet, we'll get these big, bold, brave, 100,000-mile, 100,000-step dreams, and we will do the worst thing possible with them. Nothing. We'll do nothing because it just takes too much work. It's just going to require too much of me. And so we do nothing. Now, there is an alternative to nothing, though. See, okay, you want to know how to materialize a 100,000-step dream in the future? I'll tell you how today. It's one of the secrets of life. You know how materialize a 100,000 step dream? By taking 100,000 steps. One step at a time. There is no shortcut. Just the first step, and then the next step, and the next step, and the next step after that. The people I know who are the very best at bringing the future and making it reality are the people who every single day roll out of bed and think like this. And I would encourage you to think like this. See, the people who roll out of bed every day and they look themselves in the eyes in the mirror and they say, today it's your move. Today it's your move. Today you create your life. You create your future. And you can either take a step forward, you can take a step backwards, or you can stay exactly the same, which is really a step backwards. But today, let's make no mistake, it's your move. Now, that's what we've decided to title this sermon series that we're currently in. Move. Because we believe it's your move. In fact, when we started promoting this series about a month ago, I said something, or asked for something, that I've never asked for in my 6 years here as a pastor. I asked for everyone who calls Northeast their home to commit to mandatory attendance during this series. We'd like you in the room. If you can't be in the room, join the online audience, right? But we want you here. And here's why. Because we have big, bold, brave, courageous, 100,000-mile, 100,000-step dreams for this church. And we realize that we cannot accomplish or materialize those dreams unless you get to step in with us. You see, you want to know what the number one threat is to our future as a church? You and me. You are in that future. I am in that future. We cannot accomplish our vision unless we all individually choose to move together. Or perhaps I could say it to you like this. Our dreams for the future will only become as concrete as we are committed. And so over the next 5 weeks, I'm just going to unapologetically ask you to commit, challenge you to move, welcome you to take step after step after step with us, and together, let's create the future, God's future. Now, here's the backwards thing about this series, though. The backwards thing about this series is I'm not really going to talk much about, like, specific dreams we have as a church for the future. That's what you usually hear during a vision series, right? Somebody stand up and say, God's calling us to do this, this, here are the four things or the three things or whatever that we're going to, right? And we might get to that, like, okay, maybe in week four or five, if we have time in the series, we'll get to that and we'll start talking through some of those things. But that's not really my primary concern in this series for two reasons. One, only God knows our future. One, all right? Let's just call it, only God knows. The Love the Ville church should have realized that, right? 4 years ago, when we launched Love the Ville, we had no idea it would look like this 4 years later. So only God knows what our future holds for us. But two, here's the real reason why I'm not concerned. Because no matter what our future is, it does not change our path to get there. You see, okay, for the Christian and their church, knowing or not knowing God's future for you does not change the steps to get there. And we've already been given the steps to get there. Now, that is so backwards for some of you guys who live in and work in the corporate context or in an organizational, you know, life, because you're used to creating visions and then, like, 2-year, 3-year strategic plans in order to drive you towards them, right? You catch a vision for the future, and here are the 5 strategies that are pointed towards that future, and that will drive you there. And that's a good thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that that's not necessarily a church thing. You see, at church, we understand that strategy doesn't lead to success. Jesus does. So Jesus is the strategy. And we may not know fully what God's future is for us, but we do know the path. And that is the path right behind Jesus. One step at a time. God really hasn't given us a plan to run in so much as he's given us a path to walk. And we know that path. And that path has a name. And his name is Jesus. He is the way, the truth. He is our life, our light, our love. Now, as somebody who studied the Bible for many years in school and is really focused in on the teachings of Jesus, If you were to ask me what it looks like to follow Jesus, I think I could sum up just about everything Jesus calls his followers to do in three categories, or three values, if you will. This is what it looks like to follow Jesus. One's generosity, two is servanthood, and three is community. Generosity, servanthood, community. If every day you roll out of bed and you step in this way, you will find yourself walking close behind Jesus. Generosity on his terms, servanthood on his terms, stepping into community on his terms. I'm going to tell you what, you will draw near if this is your path. So this is actually what I want to cover in the first 3 weeks of the series. And I know it sounds elementary, but it's not elementary because so few of us do it well. Now today I'm going to cover my favorite one to preach on of them all. And does anybody have any guesses which one of my favorite ones to preach on? So everybody says servanthood because we're the Loveville Church, right? And I love servanthood. It might be my favorite thing to do. But my favorite topic to preach on is actually generosity. And I know very few preachers who would say that. Most preachers hate preaching on generosity. They avoid it like the plague. Like, I don't want to preach on generosity. Okay, but I love it. I love it. I don't mind asking you for your money because I know where our church funnels the money, and it is to good ends. In fact, we will spend your money better than you will spend your money. I'm just telling you, right? And I know, so I don't mind standing up here and saying, come on, you need to give to the Loveville Church. Now, I'm getting ahead of myself, so just stepped on some toes. I'll track it back for a second, and let's begin with this. If you're a follower of Jesus or somebody who's a part of this church, I just want you to repeat the following words after me, all right? I have decided to follow Jesus. So I have decided to be generous. Simple truth, right? Wouldn't deny that. Now, what I love about Jesus is that Jesus loves us. And he would never ask us to do anything that wasn't ultimately what's best for us. And generosity is what's best for us. Secular, irreligious research has proven that generosity is, in fact, one of the keys to living a life that is satisfied, content, and full of joy. I read a Harvard research study recently that showed that one of the best ways to increase your happiness is to contribute generously to a cause bigger than you. And no wonder Jesus tells us to be generous, right? He wants this for us. Now, the research study went on to show that generosity leads to happiness, and happy people, on average, live longer lives. So I have another question for you. Who doesn't want to die? Oh boy, do I have a strategy for you today. Okay? Aren't you glad you came to church? You need to be generous. And no wonder Jesus calls us to generosity. You see, when Jesus calls his followers to be generous, he's not asking you to give something to him. He's trying to give something to you, life, in both the physical and the spiritual sense. So it's amazing. In Acts chapter 20, the apostle Paul gives us this profound Jesus quote on generosity. I'm going to read it to you today, but before I do, I'll give you the context. So the apostle Paul at this point of his life is drawing to the near end of his life, and he knows like things are, you know, about to turn for the worse. So before he gets on a ship and travels to Jerusalem for the last time, he gathers together with the leaders of a church that he just loves so dearly, the leaders of the church of Ephesus. Now, if you read this scene in Acts 20, it is this emotional, heartfelt scene. There's hugs, there's tears, and then at some point, Paul grabs a mic and he gets on stage, and he gives this farewell speech to his friends. Basically, he says, hey, after I leave, if you remember nothing else, remember these things. And one of the things he challenges them to remember is a quote on generosity from Jesus. Now, here are the two things I love about this quote. One, this quote is a unique quote to Acts chapter 20 alone. You will find it nowhere else in the Bible except Acts chapter 20. Now, isn't that fascinating? It should be. Most of the teachings, the red letters we get from Jesus, are found in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But this is not in the Gospels. We would not have it if Paul didn't include it right here in Acts 20. Now, here's the other thing that makes this quote so fascinating. It's one of the most popular quotes of Jesus. In fact, it is so popular today that it's become conventional wisdom in our culture. People just kind of say it to each other. You teach your kids, Christians and non-Christians alike, subscribe to this truth of Jesus, and yet most of us have forgotten that it actually originated with Jesus. Now, I want to read you a quote. It's a powerful one, and I believe this is one of the keys to contentment and joy in life. Acts chapter 20, Paul's given this speech, and he says this to his friends. You should remember the words of the Lord Jesus. It is more blessed to give than to receive. It's more blessed to give than to receive. Show of hands, who's heard that one before? Yeah, come on, don't lie. Yeah, it's most of us. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Some of you are like, okay, yeah, maybe it's blessed to give, but it is also blessed to receive. Right? I would not disagree with you. And that is not what this passage is saying. This passage is not saying it's not blessed to receive. It's just saying it's more blessed to give than to receive. The Greek word here underneath blessed is the Greek word makarios. And it means something like God honors or honored by God. And the way that the two verbs are constructed in this sentence, to give and to receive, they're constructed in a way that implies ongoing action rather than just a one-time gift, like a one-time gift you give or a one-time gift that you receive. No, it points more to a lifestyle. So you know what Jesus is really saying here? Jesus is telling us God honors the generous life. And I have found few truths to be truer than my own. Look, y'all, Jesus said it. Harvard research proves it. What else do you need? Not to put the two on the same level, but you follow what I'm saying. Now, even though this is conventional wisdom, it's true, right? Most of us would nod our heads and say yes. What I have found is that there is so much resistance when it comes to challenging people to be generous. And I don't get that. I mean, if God actually honors, if we believe that it is more blessed to give than receive, then why don't we just give like crazy? Okay, you know what no one has ever had to stand on stage and preach a sermon to me about? No one has ever had to stand on stage and preach a sermon about how sweet-tasting and soul-filling cookies and cream ice cream is. From Graters, especially. This sermon is sponsored by Graters, okay? It's not sponsored by Graters, but if Graters, if you're listening, give me a call. I'm not lying. All right. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah. Okay. Nobody's ever had to stand on stage and tell me that, because all I did was take a spoon, taste some cookies and cream from Graters once, and I knew this is sweet tasting, soul filling. God created me for this. Now, check it out. Why isn't the same with generosity? Why do preachers all across the globe and all across our country have to stomp on stages every week and say, you need to be generous, you need to be generous. It's good for you, okay? You need to be generous. I tell you what my opinion is. My opinion is it's because few people have actually tasted it. And if you did taste how sweet living generously is, you'd never need to hear another sermon on it ever again. Now, here's the tension, though, we experience in America, all right? Let me just lay it out for you. Most of us give, but few of us are generous. In the United States of America, most of us give. In fact, I'd go as far to say just about all of us give. But very few of us are generous. And the two are not the same thing, all right? Giving is not always generosity. Okay, giving is something that you do. Generosity is something that you are. And most of us give, but few of us actually practice a generous lifestyle. Now, if you have not leaned into generosity yet, if you're just more of a giver than a generous liver, then here's what I would tell you. It's not your fault, and I don't blame you. Because most organizations worth giving to actually don't teach generosity. They ask for a gift. Think about that. Most organizations worth giving to don't teach generosity. They ask for a gift. You walk into a room like this one, and an inspiring speaker puts a microphone on. Or you walk into a fundraiser in a room like this one, and an inspiring speaker puts a microphone on, and they stand on stage, and they start telling stories, and they throw pictures of children on the back screen, maybe a Bible verse, Sarah McLachlan comes out. There's puppies, you know? And before you know it, you know, like emotions start to run high, the tears start to flow, and you're writing a check, right? You're writing a check. Now, if you've ever written a check in that sort of impulsive, emotional way, good for you, that still counts. Giving to any good cause for any reason, I would suggest to you, is a good thing. I'm just saying that gift was not necessarily Generous. See, here's what generous people are like. This is what I've just come to notice observing them. I've noticed that generous people do not need inspiring pitches because they are already inspired to give. I've noticed that generous people are never provoked by guilt because they're already giving so consistently and so much that they have nothing to feel guilty about. I've also noticed that generous people do not care about the false prosperity promises from religious idiots. I mean leaders. I mean liars. If you've ever been to a church context or turn on the television and watched a preacher before who stomps on stage and says, if you give God a dollar, he'll give you 10, he's a liar. He's a liar. And I would welcome you to challenge him on it, okay? Go up to that preacher. I've done this before, actually. Go up to that preacher. And you say to him, hey, well, if you believe that, then you know what you should do? You should sell 100% of your net worth tonight and give it to God. He'll give you times 10 tomorrow, right? 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 Now, I'll tell you what that guy will do. He'll say, security, and you will be whisked off into the parking lot. Maybe given a coffee mug or something on the way out. And can we just be real about this too? If you give to God in order to get back more from God, that's not a gift anyways. That's an investment. Generous people don't care. They don't care about that. They care about generosity. Here's what else I've come to notice about generous people. They worry less about money. They're content with less money. They never regret what they give, and they live happier and even longer lives, and who wouldn't want that? I do. Yet so few of us have that. Why? Because we're not living generous. Now, I want to teach you how to be generous today, and I think I can do it in about 10 minutes with two simple principles. I kid you not, if you take these two principles of generosity and you apply them to your life today, you can become generous overnight. You can put yourself on a path to financial freedom and to the contentment that only comes when you're generous. So I'm gonna lay them out for you. You know, take some notes, take some pictures of the back screen, whatever, because I'm telling you, for some of you, this could be a life-transforming sermon. And don't forget, God honors the generous life. And who doesn't want to be honored by God? All right, so here's principle number one. This is huge. Generous givers, principle number one, generous givers discover consistency leads to contentment. Consistency leads to contentment. Consistency is the pathway to generosity. Now, before I describe or define for you what I mean by consistency, let's just speak the last 10%. For most of us, when it comes to our giving practices, the adjective we would use to describe those, if we were honest, is not consistency. It would be random, maybe, occasional, emotional, impulsive, spontaneous even, because that's what we do. We show up to church, the offering passes, you know, we riff around in our purse, throw the five in, not the 20, honey, the five, or, you know, okay, or we go into a room and pictures, scripture, inspiring speaker, Sarah, you know, and we're writing the check, right? Now, if you do that, again, that counts, that's good, but that's also spontaneous. It's an impulsive gift. It's an emotional gift, and here's what I'll tell you. While generous givers discover that consistency leads to contentment, spontaneous givers discover that impulsivity leads to financial worry. Impulsivity leads to worry. If you are an impulsive giver, your finances will be shrouded in worry. How do I know? Because impulsive givers tend to be impulsive spenders as well. And I'm going to tell you, impulsivity leads to uncertainty, and uncertainty will always drive you to worry. Now, I know what some of your pushback is. Some of you are thinking, Tyler, no. That's not why I have financial worry. It's not why. Okay, it's not spontaneous. It's not impulsive. It's nothing like that. The reason why I have financial worry is income. It's a cash flow issue. If I could just get more income, I wouldn't be worried anymore. Okay, now, if this is you, let me just burst the myth for a second. Okay, because here's the reality. Increasing income is not the solution for financial worry. Even though you may think it is, increasing income, your problems right now are not an income problem, it's a strategy problem. And increasing income does not make a spontaneous person less spontaneous, does it? It does not make an impulsive person less impulsive. It just gives them more to be spontaneous and impulsive with. You know what 90% of Americans do? This is true about 90% of Americans when it comes to their finances. One, we make more than we need, more than most people on the planet Earth and most people to ever live. Two, we then go and spend all, or some of us even spend more than what we make, which for those of you who spend more than you make, I don't even know how you do that. Wow. Then three, because we do that, we have no margin. And so we begin to worry. And then four, we convince ourselves that if we would just make some more income, if I could just increase the income, then things will be all right. And some of us do. Some of us go out and we work more hours. Some of us get a second job. Some of us get the promotion or the raise or whatever it may be. And we increase our income. But guess what? We haven't changed our financial strategy. So rinse, recycle, repeat. We make more than we need, even more than we need. We spend more than we make. We have no margin, so we worry. And then we say, well, I didn't need this income bracket. I needed this one. And rinse, recycle, repeat. And on and on and on it goes. Guys, can we just call it like it is? That's not an income problem. That's a strategy problem. Income does not solve spontaneous. Income does not solve impulsive. Income does not solve stupid. For most of us, we need a strategy change. Now, that's why I believe that the solution for many people in this room today to your financial stress and worry is a consistent generosity plan. A consistent generosity plan. Let me articulate clearly for you what I mean by consistency. And this may be the most important thing I say today, so you look up here, all right? This is huge. Here's what I mean by consistency. The consistently generous person says, I give a predetermined percentage regularly. And when emergency strikes, and it will, or cash flow sinks, and it might, I adjust spending first, saving second, and giving last. All right, I don't see anybody writing that down or taking pictures of the back screen. So I'm going to say it again. Because this right here could be the path to financial freedom for some of you. Some of you are going to look back to this principle right here 5 years from now, and you're going to praise God for it. Because it was the pathway out and the pathway to contentment. So I'm going to read it again. I really want you to pay attention. I want you to write it down. I want you to bore this into your head, okay? Look up here. Everybody, look up here. Over here, look up here. The consistently generous person understands, and they believe, I give a predetermined percentage regularly, and when emergency strikes, and it will, or cash flow sinks, and it might, I adjust spending first, saving second, and giving last. And I'm going to tell you what, that is so powerful. Now look, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. Because you don't have to be generous. But you also don't have to experience the contentment that only comes with living a life of generosity. You see, it's this principle right here why I can stand on stage before you right now and say, generous people worry less about money. And they're perfectly content to live on less money because they got their spending under control. You don't even have to be a Christian. Wrap your mind around it. Now, that's principle number one. Here's principle number two, all right? If consistency leads to contentment, then significance leads to consistency. Significance leads to consistency. That's what generous people understand. What do I mean by significance? Well, this is what I mean. If you give to something that's significant to you, giving will start to become more significant to you. If you give to something that you love, you'll begin to love to give. Or when you give more to what matters, giving starts to matter more. But few of us have ever stopped to figure out, well, what really matters to me and where should I be generous? In fact, you know what most of us do? Most of us give to what matters to someone else, not us. Because we walk into a room, mic, speaker, pictures, Bible verse, puppies, children, whatever, right? And we get inspired and we write a check and we put it in the plate or we give it to the organization. And guess what? You walk out the room, sometimes regretting what you gave because you gave to something that matters to someone else. You don't even know if it matters to you because you've never paused to ask yourself the question, what matters to me? And I'll go ahead and tell you this. If it takes a mic and scripture and guilt and inspiration and pictures to get you to give this time, then it will the next time, and you won't be generous in the meantime. So some of us just need to pause. We need to huddle with our family, and we need to figure out what matters to us. What matters to us? And then you need to give to what matters to you, because if you give to what matters to you, no one will have to make it matter to you, because it already matters to you. Right? All right. For those of you who've never had this conversation before as a family, I want to give you three questions that will be primers for it today. All right? I'm just going to blow through them really quickly, but these are the key to figuring out what's significant. One, what am I most heartbroken for? What grabs my heart? What am I passionate about? What do I look at and say, that should not be so, or we have to contribute to that? Two, what am I most thankful for? Like, that saved my life. That's nurturing my kids. Man, I couldn't imagine our community without that organization. I want to be a part of that. What am I most thankful for? And three, what needs are most pressing today? What must be solved? What must be addressed? Or else it's going to wreck us. What am I most heartbroken for? What am I most thankful for? What needs are most pressing today? At the end of one of those three questions is what matters to you. Or at the intersect of all three of those questions is what matters to you. Spend some time with them. All right, now as your pastor, I would be doing you a great disservice if I didn't say this right now. If you have ever gone through this process before, or if you go through this process this week and you come up with a list of what matters to you, and your local church is not near the top of that list, at the top of that list, in my opinion. Not saying the only thing on the list, but at the top of that list. Then is what is significant to you really what was significant to Jesus? Just ask for you to prayerfully consider. See, you know what Jesus did? You know what he did? He left. Peace. Deuces. He gone. Right. Okay. He died, rose from the dead, ascended to heaven. He's seated at the right hand of the Father right now. And then he commissioned his church as his plan A. And there is no plan B. His followers came along after that, and they started to write stuff, and they began to call the church the body of Jesus. Because where's hands? There's no other hands for Jesus than ours. Where's feet? Where's mouth? Where's love in the world today? So as healthy and as strong as the church is as healthy and as strong as the presence of Jesus is in the world. So I just want to encourage you. If you are not giving to the body of Jesus, if you're not investing in your local church, is what is significant to you really what was significant to Jesus? Because Jesus calls the church his bride. It's the bride of Christ, and man, does he love her. All right, with all that said, I found that sometimes when you preach a sermon like this and all the principles tend to make sense in your head, what really brings it all together is a good practical story from a fellow sojourner that can take it from head to heart. So right now, I want to give Taylor an opportunity to tell his story of him and his wife Lindsay's journey towards generosity. Check out the screen.
So, my life was driven around being successful. What was super easy for me is studying, performing on tests, learning how to be the best. And that rolled right into my career. Everything I did was for to be successful at work, to help my company, but to earn a salary. And I was really worried about how much money I could make, more so I could see how much I could save. It was really hoarding for me. I wasn't a spender. So actually it was really cheap in what I spent, but really big on how I funded my future. I was really worried about, you know, what's Taylor going to be like when he retires. And I had started my walk in faith, but fairly minor. And when I was rattled, I had something to grab onto, which was my wife, Lindsay. And as we were going through this, we started to get more and more into the church. But it was all, again, on my level, just gathering information, hearing nice sermons, and that was nice. And Lindsay really challenged me to tithe. And it was when I started to tithe that I started to regret those checks and why I was doing that. It was easy for me to calculate the impact that I was going to have. It was very easy for me to understand that was adding up to be a lot of money. we were getting asked to move. Again, I was following my career. We were being asked to move out of the country. The one car that we had in San Francisco, we didn't need. And I'm working on where we're going to park this thing. You know, I can get a friend to use it. We'll be good. We're coming back at some point. We'll need it. Just paid it off, I don't know, I think 3 or 4 weeks prior to this. And my wife wakes up and has this dream. We need to give the car away. And we don't need it. And God has asked us to give it to the church. I'm like, well, you know, God should run this stuff by me. I'm like, people don't do that. I go, don't you understand? Like, we're already tithing. This is not, like, what do I not tithe now for the next, you know, X number of months? I mean, how does this work? And I'm trying just to process this in my head. It just wasn't making sense. And only because of my love for Lindsay, not my appreciation for God, because I just couldn't grab my hands around it, I said, we'll do it. I couldn't say no to her. Her is who I was really, that's who I was talking to be honest. And what I do remember is coming home from out of the country. We had to do some things back in San Francisco, being excited to go to church, even though I knew, like, man, what are they going to do? I wanted to see some validation what we're doing with this gift. And a gentleman, one of the pastors who had changed my life, he tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around, and just face just flooding with tears. And I said, hey, Sam, what's up? And he goes, I heard someone is donating a car to the church. And I said, oh, well, that was Lindsay. I said, yeah, if you want to thank anybody, you should thank Lindsay. He goes, no, Taylor, I want to thank you. He said, you know, ever since I met you, I have seen you grow, and I have now my life's been changed. You see, my our one car for our family of the three-year-old and our baby coming just was deemed non-usable. I can't afford to fix it, and we're 30 minutes away, and I didn't know how I was going to get to work. God worked through your wife, through you, to give us this car. As I especially look back, it's easy to see where I was willing to take some steps. And those were what were comfortable for me. I was fine giving some time. I was fine listening and learning and reading. Where I just drew the line is my ability to give, especially of a financial nature. Of all the things that I've done, God has blessed me 10x what I ever thought was possible. Things have just been far more spiritually powerful. And it's just, it's becoming more who we are as a family. To be very honest, when we do drives and we help teachers with supplies, I still question, is Lindsay going a little too far? And I have to just remind myself and put myself in check and just know that she has the best interests of our family and know that she loves our family. And I know that she is, and I thank God that she is as generous as she is, because I think she's ministering to me on a daily basis, and it helps me with my addiction. I mean, there's AA for alcoholics, and there's my wife for generosity.
That's good. So three practical steps I would ask you to take if you're a Northeast person. Choose one of them. First, for those of you who have never given before to a church or to this local church, I would ask you today to level up and give an initial gift. Make a first-time, one-time gift today. I know that the generous lifestyle that I have described to you over the course of our time here together seems like it's an 1,000-step journey for you. Well, look, you know how you materialize in a 1,000-step vision for the future? But taking 1,000 steps. There's no shortcut, just a first step, and then the next step, and the next step, the next step. So I want to ask you to take the first step. Second, for those of you who have given to our church before, but it's been more impulsive, or you're living in the world of kind of spontaneity, randomness, I want to encourage you to become a consistent giver here by beginning to give a predetermined percentage regularly, And if some of you are like, what percentage that is that? Well, I would encourage you to do something sacrificial, but 1% is a good place to start. It really is. And you can move from there. Now, here's what I would say. To level one givers and to especially level two givers, if you choose to give after today, I would ask you to give online. You can get on our app, go to the gift house, super easy. You can go to our website, necchurch.org/give. And it's as simple as filling out the form and showing how often you want the gift to recur. And the reason why I want to ask you to give online is because I have found this. In our day and age, online giving solidifies consistency. In fact, you have no choice, right? Online giving solidifies consistency. We live in a flatter world today where people travel more. You're going and visiting mom on the other side of the country. You're going and visiting the grandkids for the summer. You got a lake house. Kids are in weekend activities, you know, whatever it may be, right? People, statistics show us people are in the room with us with less frequency than ever before, right? We have folks who are in our online audience every single week who never come in person. Like, that's fine. We want you to be a part of our family. But if you're going to contribute financially to our family, then it's going to have to be online. And so I would just encourage you, level 2 givers, give online. Even if you're already a level 2 giver, or if you're a sacrificial giver of this church and you give in person, solidify your consistency by moving online as well. We're 33% online in terms of our giving right now. By the end of the series, one of our secret goals, we're not making it secret anymore, is to move above 50%. Because generous churches are consistent churches. They're consistent in their giving. Now, level 3. For those of you who are consistent but have never moved into the discomfort zone, I would encourage you to move to 10% giving or more on all your income. Reason why I say 10% is because the Old Testament command is the tithe. It's a great starting point, not settling point, but starting point for the Christian who wants to give, the sold out believer. Now, here's why I say starting point, because if you read Jesus' teachings and his followers, they don't talk about the tithe. They talk about sacrificial giving. Sometimes that means new followers of Jesus give half of what they own. Jesus asked one guy to give all of what he owns, right? Everybody's call is a little bit different, but 10% is a great place to move into the discomfort zone and start. So I'd encourage you to start there. I got a friend who gave 10% of the earnings from his business in December to the Loveville Church last year, and he said it was one of the most joy-filled months he's had. I got 2 other friends who just planned their estates, and they carved out more than 10% for the church after they die. And I thought, man, that's cool. That's what I call a legacy gift. Because long after they die, their legacy will live on through Jesus' church. If that's you today, we have a couple lawyers in our church who are passionate about that. They'll be out at our information kiosk afterwards, and they'd love to talk to you more about it. 1, 2, and 3, though, I encourage you all to step. All right, you guys know that every time I preach on generosity, I don't like to end by preaching. I like to end by together practicing what we preach. So I want to welcome on stage right now, Rochelle, and one of our Loveville pastors, Tamara. Rochelle is the executive director of an amazing organization in our community called Scarlet Hope. Their mission is to provide hope and healing to women in the adult entertainment industry. They've been doing it in amazing ways for 10 years now in our city. And because of how effective their ministry is, we have decided this year to make them one of our new ministry partners. And y'all know what we do to new ministry partners around here, right? Yeah, that's right. So, Rochelle, it is my great pleasure today on behalf of this generous church to present you and Scarlet Hope with a check for $50,000. Yeah. Because we believe in you and we got your back. For those of you who are wondering, $35,000 of it will go to help a woman in our city right now in the adult entertainment industry get into their recovery program. She'll get housing. Her kids, if she's got kids, will get housing, food, education, counseling, spiritual pastoring. $10,000 of it will go to some much-needed renovations in their outreach center. $5,000 will go to equipment at Scarlet's Bakery. You got to go to Scarlet's Bakery. And that's a place where a lot of the women they help get employed. So, hey, real quick, would you do me a favor? Would you stand? And what I want to do is I want to pray over Rochelle and her ministry now. So if you could just extend your arm like you're laying hands on her. And I'm going to ask Tamara, our Loveville pastor, to say a prayer over her.
Gracious God, we are so thankful for your generosity to us, God, your grace and your mercy and your forgiveness that you give us, your unconditional love. God, thank you. Help us to never take that for granted. And because of your generosity to us, we can be generous to others. And so right now, God, we know that you have bold plans for Scarlet's Hope. And so we lift up Rochelle and her staff right now, God, that you would just equip them with everything that they need with your spirit, God, to continue to bring hope and healing to women in this city. God, we love you so much, and we know that Scarlet Hope is boldly changing lives now, and they are loving the Ville in amazing ways, and we are just so grateful to be a part of that. So, God, we just once again ask your blessings on this ministry. We know you're going to do wonderful things, and we can't wait to just walk with them and see the results and the impact that they will have. So we ask all of this in the strong name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Hey, can you cheer one of our community leaders right here, one of our community heroes? Man, we're thankful for her. Closing word. Every single week, we are able to show the love of Jesus here at Northeast to literally thousands of people all across our church, all across our city, and all across our world every single week. And we have not become the Love the Ville Church on accident. We have not become the Love the Ville Church by chance. No, it is only because every single week, faithful people continue to step up and fund the heart and the hope and the dreams of our church. And we've done great things in the past. But we shall not live in the past. We have big, bold, courageous dreams for the future, but they will only be as concrete as we are committed as a family. So I'm asking you today to commit with generosity. On your way out, grab one of these cards. They'll be at the door. They'll be at the grids. They got all the levels of giving. And I just want to tell you, thank you ahead of time. I love our generous church. Have a great week.